say the pledge.
Sure, I can do that.
Should I hold off on the roll call until they're here, or should we do a roll call and then add them in? Does it matter?
You could do the roll call and add them in, whatever. That's okay. Fine. You have Manager Green?
Present.
Gina Hansitz, not with us yet. Phil Erner, not with us yet. Joseph Maloney?
On the screen.
And Eric Stewart.
I'm here.
And someone's coming in. I have someone on the phone at 845-331-7497. Can I get your name?
Yes, Fawn. It's Ellen DeFalco.
Hi, Ellen.
How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Good. Well,
you have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Okay. So I would like to call the June 9th, 2022 meeting of Energy, Environment, and Sustainability to order. We have taken the roll and we'll add the two other legislators as soon as they can join us. So was it Legislator Stewart, did you volunteer to do the say the pledge?
Sure.
Okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I would like to have a full complement since both of them are planning to join to hear Dennis. So I'm wondering, well, we do have a quorum to approve the minutes, and maybe we'll do a quick update. And then as soon as the rest of our legislators, the rest of our committee are present, We'll go to Dennis. So with that, I would like to ask if we have a motion to approve the minutes of May 5th, 2022.
Motion.
Motion by Legislator Maloney. Second by Legislator Stewart.
Sure. I was not present at that meeting, so I really can't comment on the minutes.
You can still vote on the minutes, even if you were not at the meeting. But...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So all in favor, please signify by raising your hand and or saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion to approve the minutes, the May minutes is approved. And who has the shortest update? We have Department of Environment, Environmental Management, and UCRA.
My update will be short.
Go ahead. Welcome, Tim.
Ready? Three updates from the Department of the Environment.
Oh, go ahead, Nick.
Oh, thank you. Our Green Business Champions program is rolling along. We have three certified green businesses currently. Two of them are, Fairbrothers Industries and Saugerties, Organic Nectars and Saugerties, and then Reed Reports Medical Services in Highland. In addition to that, there are about 21 other businesses that are in the queue working through the actions they need to complete to become a certified green business.
And I would strongly urge each of us to reach out to green businesses that we know of. I know there's a star in Marbletown. Eric, I don't know if they're on the list yet or not, but that would be great. And we can all think of businesses to connect with the Department of Environment and get this, I don't know if certification is the right word. What would be the right word, Nick?
Certification.
Okay, great. All right.
And Gina is with us, for the record. Gina Hansett is with us.
Okay, Gina is here, but not Phil yet. Let's continue, please, Nick. You had mentioned a couple other things.
Yes. We are planning a Climate Smart Communities Summit that is organized by the Climate Smart Municipal Task Force for the county in partnership with the Climate Smart Committee. That is now scheduled for August 29th in the evening from 5 to 8 p.m. and it will be at the Rosendale Rec Center. This is an opportunity for representatives from municipalities around the county who are doing climate smart work to hear some presentations about projects and opportunities, but also share work that they're doing themselves. And from the County Department of the Environment, will be supported by the Hudson Valley Regional Council and Cornell Cooperative Extension in hosting that summit.
And before you go on, I just want everybody to know that it will be in place of the August Climate Smart Committee meeting, unless there's some reason legally that we can't do that. But it's tentatively scheduled for the week after, because there's 5 Mondays in August. Am I correct about that?
It is the week after the normally scheduled date, but it's due to the availability of the center rather than the calendar. So,
all right. Well, I'll consult with the clerk and clarify that. I had a quick question about not so much the Green Business Challenge, but the organic waste composting. Is that on your list?
It is not.
How is that coming? I've had questions about whether or not certain businesses, schools, hospitals should be participating. And at this point, it's, I believe, anyone who's generating 2 tons or 1 ton, are we? Yep.
That's correct.
And is there a list that I can check when somebody asks, or should I reach out to Michael Darcy? Or
currently we have a list published of generators that are 1 ton per week, between 1 ton per week and 2 tons per week on the website. When we update that in September, in order to provide notice to those who are regulated starting in January of next year, it will include 2 tons per week all the way down to 0.75 tons per week and greater.
Great.
So that list is the official list of who is regulated. And then
is that posted on the Department of Environment website?
It is under Food Waste Prevention and Recovery Act.
Wonderful.
All right. The last quick update I have is that the RFP for the Reuse Innovation Center feasibility study capital project was released today. So that's how, and expecting proposals within 4 weeks.
I know I'm supposed to be very professional, but I can't contain my joy. And I see legislator Stewart has a hand up.
Oh, yeah. Nick, I had a question about the green business certification. Is there like an application that we can get from the website, or how does a business go about applying for that certification?
Right. So all of the application is handled through a website. There's a link to it from the county's Green New Deal website.
But okay.
The link itself is ulsternewyork.greenbiztracker.org, which is the website that's hosting it. There are core measures and elective measures that the business completes after completing a profile, and then they can see what they need to do to certify based on that.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
One thing I would like to request is that the businesses that are either certified or going through the process, we have an invitation to the Ulster County Fair Green Living Expo, and just to let them know that that opportunity is available, and they could even, you know, I don't know if there's a door sign or something that they could display. And I do think that more and more people are looking for green businesses and giving them preference. So I'll be sure between myself and Kim Mayer that you get that information, and it'd be great to share it with them.
Of course. We do have a door sign.
Wonderful.
It looks like this. Ah. It's a little small, but a window sticker for businesses.
Okay. I see you're on mute, so I'm assuming your report is complete and we can go to Planning Director Dennis Doyle. We're going to take resolution 308 out of order because he has another meeting, and it's declaring Ulster County's intent to act as lead agency under New York State Environmental Quality Review Act (SEQRA) for the purpose of constructing a government operations center and appurtenances to be located at Paradise Lane in New Paltz, Department of Emergency Services. And I do believe there was a letter from Supervisor Neil Batez supporting the project and also the county taking, participating in the SEQRA process as lead agency. So Dennis, please.
You want to move it for discussion, Chairman?
Yes, that would be a good idea. Did I see a hand, Legislator Stewart? Or Legislator Hansen? Thank you. And a second, Legislator Erner. Thank you. All right. Please go ahead with, some background information on this.
Thank you, Chair. Much appreciated. And thank you for taking this out of order. That's also appreciated. So a lead agency under the State Environmental Quality Review Act is that agency that coordinates the environmental review of a project. It is generally established, indeed, if there is an issue, it is always established on the basis of the agency that has the most power and has the most technical capability in terms of reviewing and implementing the project and understanding the environmental impacts associated with it. The project that we're currently talking about is a government operations center. The site is in New Paltz. The only agencies that can be lead agencies are those that are involved. An involved agency must have the ability to approve or fund a portion of the project in order for it to be considered an involved agency. In this instance, we would believe that the involved agencies here would be the Department of Environmental Conservation, the town of New Paltz, either through its planning board or its town board, and those would be the only ones that would have the potential as of right now to be involved agencies and as such to take lead agency. The action has been characterized as an unlisted action. It's not, which means that it is not likely to require the preparation of an environmental impact statement. But what we wanted to do is to make, and it's not necessary for us to conduct a coordinated review for unlisted actions. However, the county in the past has taken a very conservative role with respect to making sure that its actions under SEAKR are well documented and transparent to the agencies, other agencies that are involved, and to the community in which it's taking its actions. So in this instance, what we are proposing is that the county would act as lead agency to coordinate environmental review and to do the necessary studies and public outreach and for this particular project. Examples where we have done this before have been the Veterans Cemetery in New Paltz and a public safety radio tower in Saugerties within the last couple of years. Those are done. In the past, we've done lead agencies for the construction of the project in the city of Kingston that established the SUNY Ulster campus in the city of Kingston and a few other areas. And we also usually take lead agency with respect to some of our projects as it relates to roads and bridges.
Could you say a little bit about the purpose of the center and why New Paltz? Just, you know, a little clarification.
Oh, sure. The Government Operations Center in New Paltz has been, the Government Operations Center in general has been part of the county's capital program for a number of years now. What we've done is we've taken a look at the needs of our emergency operations services, particularly our EOC and our 911 center, and looking at how they could be combined in terms of providing a more efficient and effective operation. They're clearly undersized and underrepresented in terms of their needs right now. And this became even more apparent when we looked at what we went through with respect to the ice storm more recently. We've gone through a fairly significant amount of site selection process, looking at over 10 sites, and then coming back and actually doing concept plans for at least 10 sites. We narrowed those 10 sites down to two sites that possibly could meet our needs. One was on Golden Hill with the reuse of an existing building up there on Golden Hill, known as the health department building. And the other one was the Paradise Lane site. The Paradise Lane site rose to the top as a preferred site for several reasons. One is it was the only site that we looked at that had the ability to essentially have access to the communications needs for an emergency management center from two different substations. The Priorities Lane site can be accessed both from the south of the site as well as from the existing telecommunications infrastructure on 299. It is also the only site that we're aware of that could be accessed from two different electrical substations. Again, the South Ohioville substation to the south and a substation on 299. So it offered the redundancy that we would look for with respect to establishing a PSAP and an emergency operations center. And it's one of the lessons that we learned, I think, from the ice storm in Kingston, when Kingston had substantial amounts of power outages, including our own operations center at that particular point in time.
I think that's very helpful. One thing I would like to recommend, since it's early enough in the process, although you've already done some designing, but I believe that emergency facilities should have solar with battery backup. To think about planning that right in as the facility is being designed. I think the New Paltz fire station, if I'm not mistaken, is an example, and they certainly have solar. I'm not sure if they have battery backup yet, but to have emergency facility, to prioritize emergency facilities for that level of reliability where they can actually become a microgrid, you know, an island off in the case of a power outage, That's different than what you were speaking of, which is the communications ability. And that's also really important. And I see.
So thank.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. So thank you for bringing that up. It's one of the critical design things that we sought when we did the RFP for this project. We brought on board a well-respected architect out of New York City for the major design elements of the project. And we supplemented that work with a local architect that has a substantial amount of experience with respect to green building. And the goal here is to create, I think, one of the first in the state zero fossil fuel facilities with respect to a emergency operations center. One of the advantages that the New Paltz site offers us is that there is lands available at the New Paltz site that we can not only put solar on the building, but we can also put solar on the property that's available to us that's not readily developable for other uses.
Excellent. I see Legislator Stewart.
Oh, thank you. Actually, Director Doyle just answered my question. I was going to see if there were plans to put solar power on the roof or, you know, freestanding units. So thank you for that.
The answer to that is both.
Yeah.
And we're in the building design, the concept design basically faces the building so that we have maximized solar south. In addition, it also maximizes interior lighting, natural light to the interior of the structure, which is a challenge in a building that essentially has to be very security conscious.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Legislator Maloney, please.
Yeah. I don't know as much about this as I'd like to, but everybody I talk to says very positive things. It's something that we need, so I'm just looking for some clarity. So this is a property that the county owns?
No, the county is going to purchase the property, and there's a separate resolution under consideration in other committees to provide for that purchase. The property is around 56 acres. Out of the entire 56 acres, the county anticipates that it will need about six of those acres, between five and six of those acres for this project. And then we would be looking to essentially use the rest of that acreage in terms of in encouraging other development on the rest of that acreage. And we would go through the necessary processes that we'd have to do in terms of doing that. So we would intend to subdivide the property at this particular point in time. And we would use the residual value of that property to help pay back some of the cost of acquiring the property.
So we're gonna subdivide it and then sell it off in an auction or?
No, we would not go through, I don't imagine we would go through an auction process. I would imagine we'd go through a highest and best use process in conjunction with the legislature in terms of what other types of uses could be used. There may be a possibility for additional county uses that we haven't looked at this particular point in time, but we know that there's interest in the project from other types of uses that could go there.
So, and we know that already. Was this property for sale? Is that how we found it when we were looking for sites? It was openly for sale, so we were looking at properties that were on the market?
As part of our effort to essentially look at the sites that were available, we actively looked first at municipally owned sites, second at sites that were available or we knew could be available, and or third with respect to sites that weren't available but made sense with respect to the ability to site the facility. We established an area to look at which ran basically from 299 in the south all the way to 199 and Route 209 in the north. We identified, I would say, more than 30 or 40 sites. We moved them down to somewhere in the neighborhood of 14 sites. Out of the 14 sites, we moved them down to 10 sites. From the 10 sites, we actually did concept plans for those sites and moved them down there. As part of identification of sites, the Paradies Lane site had significant numbers of various proposals in the past on it. We reached out to that individual and landowner and indicated that it was going to be for sale. And as part of that work, we began our due diligence work once we looked at that we thought the site would survive as a preferred site. We began our due diligence on that, and we have conducted an appraisal on the site.
Who did the appraisal?
There was the county hired an appraiser to do that site.
The appraiser
has a lot of experience in vacant land.
What company did we use for the appraisal?
I can get that for you off the top of my head. I don't remember. I believe that the last name of the person was Goldman or Goldberg, but I will provide that information if it's necessary.
Okay.
I think we provided the appraisal as part of the work that we've done in terms of the resolution that was provided to support the purchase of the price. We provided that appraisal.
Did we ask the owner of the property if he'd be willing to subdivide? He or she'd be willing to subdivide?
We actually did. Yes.
And he said,
we looked at that, and the response has been that the parcel that made the most sense for us in terms of security reasons and isolation reasons and concerns about what could be adjoining uses was the most valuable piece of the property. And so with that, we began a discussion as whether or not there was a sale of the entire prior property was possible.
Okay. And who was the local architect?
The local architect was Rick Alfondre, Alfondre Architecture.
Okay, I've heard of him. And why would the DEC not be the lead agent?
DEC generally does not like to take lead agency positions with respect to their interest in terms of being an involved agency. In this instance, the likelihood of the permit that DEC would be issuing is probably an approval for stormwater and maybe an approval for, I think right now, the only one I'm aware of would be stormwater. So if you look at the breadth of the permits that DEC has and their interest in the site, it's not as direct as the county's essentially design and operation of the site.
Okay. Can I just get the appraisal when you get a chance?
And sure.
What is the accepted price and how close was it to the appraisal?
Sure. The appraised value of the property was $4.3 million with a hypothetical condition. A hypothetical condition on an appraisal reflects the fact that there were assumptions made relative to how the appraisal was conducted. In this instance, the major assumption that was made was that the site was clean at the time that that it was sold. The site was a former apple orchard, and as a former apple orchard, it does have certain kinds of things associated with it, particularly heavy metals that were residues from pesticides. So the site is going through the process of becoming a brownfield site. The brownfield site offers some significant advantages to private developers in terms of their ability to clean up the site and get paid for those cleanups. The county has done and has submitted as part of its efforts, I believe about 4,000 pages of environmental reports. There's a substantial amount of environmental information here. So the hypothetical condition basically says that the site was clean. We looked at our consultants and had our consultants estimate what a clean site would cost. Their estimate was somewhere between looking at the quantity of dirt that has to be removed from the site and buried on site. Their estimate was somewhere between $800,000 to $1 million, and that reflects the current purchase price.
Can I also request that as well?
What's that?
The estimate on the cleaning up of the property.
Yep.
Thank you.
There's costs. We provided the legislature estimated costs for the sites that we've looked at.
What's that?
We provided the legislature estimated costs for the sites that we've looked at.
But I thought you said there was you got an estimate, like, yep, a report on what from a firm that would tell us what it would take to basically remove the brownfield aspect of this property.
Yeah, I don't have a report. I have an estimate. That is a number based on the cubic yards that would be there. So I don't have a report on that basis.
That's an estimate we did.
I would say that. I'm sorry.
We didn't hire a firm. It's an estimate that we did.
No. It came from the process of finding this site and designing the government operations center was divided into two separate tracks. The first track was essentially a site selection track. And the firm that did that work was GPI. They have a substantial amount. They're a civil engineering firm, have a substantial amount of environmental experience. And they're the ones that did the estimates for both the costs and the estimate for cleanup on the site. And that the other piece of that was on the site selection was, while that was ongoing, we were also doing what they call program design. And the program design was essentially taking a look at what the building would look like, how the pieces would fit into it, so that we could do concept work in terms of how they would lay out at the various sites. So it was a combination of civil engineering work being done by a GPI, as well as the work being done by Urban and Rick Alfandry Architecture. And that's been synthesized together in terms of trying to make sure that when we chose a site, that it would work for the necessary pieces that we need.
But we haven't had anyone specifically look at this site and tell us what it's going to cost. You're making it sound like we need to skim this property because of the pesticides and everything else. But we haven't got a specific estimate for this property to be skimmed.
So the current, yes, in fact, we do. And let me just explain that. The current landowner, in terms of entering the brownfield site, the brownfield program, did a substantial amount of environmental work on the site. There are, I would say, in the multiple test sites, trying to characterize the amount of contamination that's on the site. Looking at those multiple test sites, they come to the conclusion in terms of the depth of soil that has to be essentially removed and replaced on that site in order to eliminate the threat of contamination. So what we did is we took a look at that depth of soil that was characterized by the owner's consultant that is going through the review process with DEC, and estimated the amount of quantity that we would have to remove and the cost of those quantities using standard estimating costs. So it's not like we just guessed at it, or it's not like we didn't know that how much the contamination was there. There's some pretty good background information in terms of looking at the amount of soil that has to be removed and relocated.
And you said that was the owner's consultant?
No, we did the estimates ourselves, but we relied on the tests that were done by the owner's consultant. Now that those tests are not just going to the owner's consultants, are also provided to the Department of Environmental Conservation as part of the nomination.
And are we going to skim the entire 56 acre property?
No, absolutely positively not. And that's a great question. Because what we're proposing to do by subdividing this is we'd only have to remediate that portion of the land that would be involved in the construction of the emergency management center. So when you look at that, the remaining of that, because we know what's there and because these heavy metals don't migrate, they remain in the soil, not in the water column, you can pause the rehabilitation or the remediation of the remainder of the site and let the private sector essentially on a reuse remediate the rest of the site. The estimates that we have looking at where we are now, and this is preliminary, where we are now in terms of the location of the facility, the things that we have to put on that facility, the amount of parking, other types of things, the estimates are between $100,000 to $150,000 to essentially remediate that portion of the site that would be used for the county's facility.
Okay, I see Legislator Stewart.
Yes, I was just curious if the entire 57-acre parcel is all a former apple orchard, or if there's also woodlands or other, you know, fields or, you know, what have you.
So so let me see if I can characterize the site. We know that a substantial portion of the site was used for apple orchard. It hasn't been used, and it's clear now, for quite some time. And its most current agricultural use was essentially for hay crop. And that was only on a portion of the site. The back portion of the site, and I would estimate it's somewhere in a neighborhood of about 15 acres or more, are in wetlands, federal wetlands areas back in there. So I don't know for a fact, but I tend to doubt that there were areas in that area that essentially were used for apple orchards. Some of the testing that we've looked at indicates that the most, when we look at the soil contamination, it's associated with those active apple orchard areas, which are towards the front of the site and not towards the back of the site.
Okay, great. I guess my main concern was to see if, you know, we were going to be cutting down a bunch of woodland.
No.
Thank you.
No, it's meadow now for the most part, and federally designated wetlands, which are then superseded in some instances by the town of New Paltz wetland statute.
Thank you.
Chairman Green, just an FYI for legislators, Resolution 309 that's going to Public Works has, I think, close to 1,000 pages of backup with a lot of this detail that Dennis is going over, and maps that will show you what the site is. That resolution didn't come to you, so I didn't include the backup, but the information is in with Resolution 309.
Thank you.
Thanks.
If there are no further questions, I would like to call the question because I know that Director Doyle has to get to another meeting. So do we need another motion, or is the motion?
No, you can vote.
Okay, so all in favor of resolution number 308, assigning lead agency to the county for the operations center. All in favor, please signify by saying aye or raising your hand. Anyone opposed?
I'm just going to look up the backup. I'll probably end up being a yes, but I just hate to vote on something until I really see the backup. So I'll take a look at the documents I get.
Okay. And in other words, you can change your vote if it goes to the floor.
Is that correct?
Right? Yep. Okay.
If I may, Legislator Maloney, would you like to, you can access those documents on the OneDrive, or you want me to send them to you? The problem with sending them to you directly is they're extremely large files. I have no issue with respect to sending them to you, but if you can access them on the OneDrive, it may save us some difficulty.
I'll take a look on the OneDrive.
Okay. If you have anything you need, just let me know.
Thank you, Dennis.
And I can put it on the OneDrive for the committee on Monday. I'm not in the office tomorrow, sorry. But we'll get it on the one
Monday. Thank you for.
And if you can look at Public Works on the OneDrive, it is in there on there.
Okay, I'll talk to Laura. I'll do that then as well.
Excellent. So resolution number 308 passes, and thank you everyone for a good discussion. And I'd like to at this point go back to the UCRRA. And then the Department of, or rather the Environmental Management Council. And thank you for being patient, Tim. And if you would kindly fill us in on what's going on with UCRA.
Sure. I just wanted to give a quick update on the executive director search. The job posting has been posted since last Friday to like our website and social media. I believe it hit like the local papers like the Freeman on Tuesday, and we got it out to a number of industry organizations, and it'll end up in, you know, the newsletters that go out for like SWANA and NYSAR and those types of places, because we were really trying to be, you know, pretty far reaching and cast a wide net. So it's almost a week now. We've received a couple resumes. I don't want to speak too much for the board on what their plan is, but if you say give it about 30 days, I would anticipate they might start some interviews around mid to late July, but don't quote me on that. But that seems to make sense. We do have a zero waste committee meeting, one of the agency's zero waste committee next Thursday, if anyone's interested. It's probably going to be a WebEx instead of making the board members drive in at 4 o'clock. And that's going to be something I've spoken about previously. Angie just wants to go over with that committee the FSR, the new FSR grant application with regards to hopefully purchasing some equipment that we can get out to the town transfer stations in order to, you know, be a drop-off point for organics diversion at those places. So once again, that'll be next Thursday at 4 o'clock. Belinda will probably have an agenda out before then that she can send to anyone. Another thing I wanted to bring up, I know, Manna, you heard us discuss it at our board meeting a couple weeks ago. But I'd gotten together with you know, Charlie Whitaker, our compliance guy, Larry Rickey, Lead Scale, Scale House people, our attendants inside the transfer station, for two separate reasons. And these things, I know the Freeman article came out and lumped everything together, which wasn't the actual case. So there were two things that we were trying to look at and attack. One of the items had to do with how we were identifying and classifying some of the waste that was coming in between MSW and C&D. And I think this goes in line with the RFP that's going to be released. So I think it's important. It'll be useful, especially if whoever ends up doing this study, you know, reaches out to us and wants more detail. So we're trying to get a little bit ahead of that and help you guys from that matter. One of the questions I had is when the town transfer station boxes come in, the attendants on the floor call out estimates of what's C&D and what's MSW. But one of the things we weren't capturing as well as we possibly could was especially the pay-as-you-go customers, the pickup trucks, the people with pickup trucks and trailers and the U-Hauls and that type of stuff. And we actually got together and coordinated a plan to where our transfer station attendants are trying to call out and estimate all the loads, which is going to help all of us really help identify, you know, what's in our waste stream. And we also, as part of this, we have SUNY Stony Brook, who's doing the waste audit study for the state, actually. It's DEC funded. They'll be back in the first week of August to do their second year. They did a presentation actually at the Solid Waste Conference last month with cluster charts and everything. So they're actually gathering a lot of interesting data and really, really getting specific down to, you know, the amount of kitty litter that they found in residential garbage. So it's pretty interesting. But I bring this up to you because you'll notice when you get our monthly reports, like the treasurer's reports, if anyone's seen, I always put breakout MSW and C&D on top. When the May numbers come out, you're going to see a pretty big swing because in the past 3 years, we've averaged around 27-28% C&D of our total volume. But for May, and it was, I think, May 6th, we made this change. And actually, Larry Rickey is going over and auditing the loads as well with you know, because he has a DEC mindset, which is going to help us on the reporting end. It actually dropped down to under 17%. I think it was 16.7% with C&D doing it this way. And the, you know, I always pose the question too, especially when you're talking about landfills, are we talking about volume or are we, you know, and how much space it takes up? Or are we talking about tonnages, which are always two different things, which is fascinating to me. And I hope that gets covered as well. And, you know, looking into those things specifically in the feasibility study. So with these pay-as-you-go customers, before we did this, the first four months and a couple of days, 95% of those loads by tonnage was classified as C&D, and now we're at around actually a 50-50 split. So now when you see those numbers of those reports coming in, now you'll know why. We're trying to get more specific and, you know, and get more accurate, both for, you know, our purposes, your purposes, and for DEC reporting purposes. Now, that aside as well, the individuals who are on the floor, we've actually tried to recover more. Charlie Whitaker has been pushing this. We have to be careful because there's a line to be drawn, you know, with safety in those buildings. But this is also a start for us that if we ever do get to the point of creating a diversion building on site to where we can separate identified loads before they dump to keep them away from like the big packer trucks so that it's safer. We can, depending on how this stuff is classified with DEC, we can keep stuff on the floor longer so we can go through it better so we can recover more. But we got to say to ourselves, is that worth it? So that's where these numbers start to come in. are so, and I'm only going to be talking about specifically like clean wood that's pulled out of loads and can go back to our pile to grind up for our composting operation, and cardboard. Just at our Ulster transfer station, and I'm comparing April, the month of April, and the month of May, we went from 10 tons in April of clean wood pulled out. These are the guys on the floor pulling it out, up to 36 tons. Those are that's incredible. And I tip my cap to our lead scale person, our scale house people, and the attendants working in the transfer station, because they deserve most of that credit. And cardboard went from 10 ton in April up to 21 ton in May. So when you combine those two, so that's 37 ton, extra ton that we diverted off the floor. That's one tractor trailer load. And then when it comes to operations fiscally, that's essentially a savings of $2,800 in cost to us, but it's also additional revenue of about $1,600 in cardboard. Just an extra hard work. But like I said, there's only so much we can do because you reach that, you know, what's safe and what's not. So, but that's when we get into talking how we can expand. And, but we've had a lot of discussion with board member Tom Kakanis on this as well. So at some point in time, you know, we'll be getting together on this and see what we possibly can do to add on to what you guys are doing as well. So that's all I have.
That's an excellent report, Tim. Thank you. And I know that one of the things that Tom Kakandas has suggested is possibly expanding the floor, the tipping floor, and you mentioned a separate building.
Yeah, well, that's he'll tell you in his opinion, and Charlie Whitaker will even back him up on that, that the design of our current transfer station isn't really set up for that type of expansion. So that's where they got into the discussion of looking at operational changes in order for us to accommodate a separate building. So he's in completely involved in that. Yes. Correct.
What happened to the clean wood? You mentioned that the cardboard got baled and marketed. What do we grind that?
Yeah. The clean wood goes back to our grinding pile to get mixed in as a bulking agent with our food waste that comes in. Yep.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah. Any questions? Yes, please. Legislator Maloney.
Yeah. So what's going on right now is fantastic. Knowing how much more we could have done for the last couple of years is what you have to acknowledge, that we can always do better. You were mentioning how much more we could do of what you're describing if we had a bigger floor. That's what I'm hearing, right? If we had, and I understand I'm being told by a couple of people that it's just, well, the property's not really set up for it. Why don't we bring a firm in that specializes? It wouldn't be that expensive to. I just think with what you're saying, we're now diverting and recycling and reusing and turning into compost and the numbers. How can we not explore? I think something that'll come back with some of these things we're looking to get, reduce our solid waste production. I think probably the lowest hanging fruit is the tipping fee, and then expanding our floor to be able to sort more. It just seems like crazy if we don't look into this, because ultimately it wouldn't be that expensive in the scheme of things, and we could be really cutting down on what gets sent off with regards to C&D and solid waste. What does anyone think? Why wouldn't we look harder and immediately into expanding your ability to do what you're having so much success doing right now?
Yeah, no, that's what I said. That's what we're doing. This is the start of exactly that. And like I said, board member Kakandas was directly involved in that and working with Charlie Whitaker and discussing exactly that expansion. You got to remember, too, when you talk about the footprint of our facility, all that has to be approved by the DEC. There's a perfect area, but currently across from the transfer station. So operationally and the traffic flow and all that, which has to be approved, it would be a perfect place. But right now we have all of our trailers there, so we have to find – because board member Kakanis wants to do a full operational review due to his, you know, his experience in the industry as well. So him working with Charlie Whitaker, those two minds and the operational knowledge. And at some point we've had this discussion at a couple board meetings ago, actually. Once that happens, then yes, they were going to talk about bringing in a firm. So all those things that you're saying has already actually been discussed. Yes.
Okay. So I think it's time to get to hire the firm and get it going. I just, this, what ends up happening is we talk about things for years, and I'm just saying, it sounds like we're right up on the part where you bring the company in and they let us know what our options are.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. Yeah, no, I understand. The good thing is, and even if we're saying it a little differently, we are saying the same thing.
Okay, so
that's the most important part. Right, I haven't been doing this for too long. Nobody else had done it before.
No, I want to build upon the success that you're having right now.
Absolutely.
I want you to know that you have the support of the legislature with regards to whatever you need. I'm pretty sure that this committee would be supportive of whatever you come up with, but we do want to see action. And every month, I think this should kind of be on the docket to get an update logistically on where we are. And I think it sounds like we're just about ready to hear that we've hired a firm.
Yeah, we're getting there. That's like I said, our board specifically said they want to do this operational review before they hire the firm. I believe that was the March meeting that happened. So that's, you know, out of my hands. So you're also welcome to, and obviously I can bring it back to the board. This is, you know, what we just talked about, but that was a directive that they gave me not to do that until the operational review happened. So
I also would like to add that when the firm is hired to do the feasibility study for a reuse innovation center, there's nothing to exclude that from being on ACRA property. Part of what the company will be doing, the firm will be doing, is looking at sites and determining whether it should be one site, multiple sites, you know, how that whole system for reuse and diverting difficult to recycle materials, you know, not the regulated recyclables, but to be able to increase our waste diversion. So I think a lot of things are coming together, and I'm really very pleased to see the action that's taking place and the results. Anybody else have any questions for Tim? Okay. Department, or rather Environmental Management Council, Emily?
Okay, so when I told Dave Haldeman that I would be on this meeting, I would represent the EMC, I forgot that I didn't actually go to the meeting and I haven't received the minutes. So I'm going to ask Nick if he has if he was there and he remembers anything specifically. And otherwise, I won't give a report except for to say that our speaker didn't show up. I know that.
That is correct. No, I don't have anything notable to communicate from that meeting.
Okay.
I'll get the minutes out soon.
And unfortunately, I was not at that. I attended the April meeting, but not the May meeting. So I can't help either.
So the minutes will come out usually like a week maybe before our meeting, which is the last Wednesday in June. So that would be the 29th.
And I know that the college has been having difficulty with designating rooms and COVID and so forth. So it's
I think it went back to all Zoom last Wednesday or the May meeting, and just something, an emergency came up for me that day, and I just missed that hour. So anyway, but I just want to say again that all the municipalities that attend the EMC meetings are doing really awesome work, whether it's on land use and natural resource inventory and open space or on climate smart issues.
That's great. Okay, at this point, I would like to go back to resolutions and let's see. For appointments, we may not let's just get the motion on the table for resolution number 253, appointing members to the Recycling Oversight Committee. And in this case, Margot Becker is now on the board of the Resource Recovery Agency. And I believe that created an EMC vacancy. And the nomination is that Dave Haldeman be appointed to the Recycling Oversight Committee.
So you'll be moving this for discussion as presented?
Yes.
I think Dave would be great.
Okay, so moved by Legislator Erner and seconded by
Stewart, I think.
Legislator Stewart. Okay, thank you. Any discussion?
I'm sorry, I guess I chimed in too early. I just said I think Dave would be great in that position.
Great. And just to be sure, excuse me, that folks understand that the primary purpose of the Recycling Oversight Committee is to recommend additions to what have been designated as regulated recyclables, or in a case where there's no longer an economic market, that a material be taken off the mandatory list. But there are a lot of other related functions, the zero waste implementation plan that we've been working on actually came out of a draft from the Recycling Oversight Committee, secondary to our zero waste policy that was passed and designated that body to create a zero waste implementation plan or action plan. All right, so did we call the question on? Not yet.
Manager, I just had one quick question, I guess, for the entire group. When it comes to, you know, recycling and zero waste, I know that, you know, the policies on what gets recycled varies from municipality to municipality, and also depending on who the consumer uses for their, you know, to take away their waste, or whether they take it to the transfer station. And I was wondering if there's been any thought about maybe kind of making, you know, what gets recycled more uniform across the county, as opposed to leaving it to the municipalities and the individual companies.
The regulated recyclables are definitely across the county. One of the things we've been looking at is what each transfer station is doing, because there's some wonderful, you know, innovative initiatives going on, including, I just found out today, I didn't realize that Town of Rochester is composting on site. And there's also, you know, very excellent initiatives, and the idea is to collect those and share them and encourage, and maybe ultimately, if need be, to fund some modifications that will allow more waste diversion to go on at the town sites, and in some cases even be able to market materials from the town sites directly. Where it breaks down is with the haulers, and they have to collect the regulated recyclables, but that's all that is mandatory. From time to time, they've done some other programs, and hopefully some of the haulers are getting into the composting business now that there's a mandatory food waste diversion law. Does that answer your question?
That certainly helps. I was just trying to see if there, if there might be something that we could do to make the policies a little more uniform, because I know that in the city of Kingston, for example, you know, they recycle cardboard, they recycle paper, whereas in the service that I use at my home in the town of Marbletown, that is not an option. And the only recycling is like plastics and glass.
Then we need to look into that, because cardboard and all forms of clean paper, office paper, newspaper, magazines, are mandatory. And that means the hauler does have to collect them.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Thank you. Because we use waste management. And like I say, in Kingston, waste management provides a container for paper and cardboard. And that does not happen in Marbletown. So
what do you mean by waste management? What do you mean by waste management?
That's the company who comes and collects our garbage and collects our recyclables.
That's the hauler.
And do you have is there a waste management? Is there a business in Kingston that you're speaking of for waste management?
I'm just saying that in Kingston, in the property we own in Kingston, which is next door to Legislator Erner's house, you know, we have recyclable containers, and that includes, you know, a separate container for cardboard.
Are you paying waste management to pick up the waste at the property that you own in Kingston?
I believe so.
I think it's the same company providing different services in different towns.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
And have you told them that in Marbletown you want cardboard pickup and you will pay for it?
I have not specifically done that, but I know that driving down my street, you know, everyone has their, you know, green containers and the ones with yellow tops for recyclables, and there's only two, whereas in Kingston, there's three.
You need to look at your bill and see what you're working on, but I just want to say, because I live in Kingston, are you paying waste management because it's a commercial building?
It's only a four-unit building, so it's not a commercial building.
Are you allowed to just put the waste out and get bins from the city of Kingston and have your taxes pay for that? You might want to call DPW up and see what the limit is for a four-unit.
Is it possible it's all single stream, or you can put the cardboard in the one? They just don't that they take it all in one bin.
It is possible.
Perhaps. Yeah.
I think Kingston may separate more. They may.
You need to be very specific when you speak.
What's that, Vaughn?
I was going to say, if it's in the city of Kingston next to Phil Erner, this building, isn't the city picking it up?
Is it municipal pickup?
That would be municipal. You're correct. So the city of Kingston then provides the extra dumpster as opposed to waste management. Okay.
And you may single stream. Yeah. You may be able to put everything in that one at your house.
Yeah, you should call Waste Manage for the one in your house and call the DPW for whatever you have information on in the city of Kingston.
Okay, great. Thank you for that.
I would take it one step further. If Waste Management because they do have facilities, I believe, up in Albany, and I know that other haulers have facilities for single stream. What we have not done in Ulster County is ban single stream recycling. There are people that want to see us do that. But for now, the haulers, as long as they separate all the regulated recyclables from the residual trash, they are entitled to do that. It makes one less container and one less, you know, unless it's a divided pickup system, but
more contamination though. Single stream is absolutely not good.
And Eric, just for your information, in the city of Kingston, the bins say the city of Kingston, and they have very clear instructions on the tops of the lids. They tell you what to do. Yellow is paper, and green is blue is containers.
Right.
And and if you're not paying for waste management, then that's good.
Right. So as Manna Jo says, the problem lies with the haulers because the city of Kingston is doing the correct thing, whereas waste management in where I live perhaps is not. So
they're not doing the best thing.
Exactly.
And if it turns out that they say, no, we're only taking bottles and cans, then I believe that UCRRA does have an enforcement officer. So, but let's take it one step at a time, ask that question, and we'll take it from there. I would like to ask Legislator Hansett, do we have a resolution that we're discussing right now? Are we between? I'd like to go.
You haven't voted on 253.
Yeah, we were on 253, appointing member to the Recycling Oversight Committee.
Okay. We just need to call for the vote.
Can Gina, would you take over for a minute? I'll be right back.
Sure.
And I vote yes on resolution 253.
Okay.
Okay. So we're gonna do the vote now, Ms. Fawn.
That sounds like the right thing.
Just okay. Call for the vote. On resolution number 253, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, 5-0.
Anyone opposed? Okay. I don't have any information on this, but resolution number 296, declaring support for the New York State Climate Action Council scoping plan. So we open it up for discussion.
You need a motion to
discuss? I'll make a motion. Bill's a second.
Okay, any comments? Any discussion?
I have some comments. Can everyone hear me okay? I'm in the room here next to Gina.
Yes. Yeah, we're together.
All right. So I read through the scoping plan, and I'm going to vote yes. I just want to make a couple points about it, though. I think we need... going forward, and I know this is a state thing that we're saying we support, but we really need to be looking at, this is me wearing my old physics hat because I used to work in university physics, and we need to really be looking at the amount of energy that we waste when we transform from one thing to another. So that comes into play when we're talking about electrifying all of our facilities, and I want us to really pay attention to what we could do even without electricity. Like mechanical energy is generally a much simpler form of energy. It's easier to work with and less, you generate less waste and inefficiencies when you just do things mechanically that you could. Like think of, for example, a can opener is a really easy example. Like in the 80s, right, everybody had an electric can opener, but do you really need electricity to open a can? No. So that's kind of a silly example, but there's much more serious examples.
Oh, Phil, you cut out there for a second.
Okay. What was the last thing everybody heard?
The can opener is a silly thing, but there's better examples.
Right. Like, so this resolution, we're talking about buildings and motor vehicles and things that consume a lot more resources and how to make that more efficient. So I just want us to be conscious of that. We're endorsing a certain plan that the state has, but we really need to be thinking about ultimately how we plan to reduce the total consumption that we're doing, the total extraction. One key to that's going to be how do we make better, how do we like simplify our energy and resource consumption system, in my opinion. So I just wanted to put that out there as we're supporting this state plan.
So I think the resolution is, it is supporting the scoping plan. I want to be sure people know that, there was an extension from, June 10th to July 1st. To submit comments, and I'm coordinating comments for the Mid-Hudson Regional Sustainability Coalition Energy Working Group. And one of the main comments we're going to make is that renewable energy infrastructure needs to be put in place ahead of, and that's not to say to not start switching over to beneficial electrification, which in the case of buildings is air and ground source heat pumps primarily, but to stress energy efficiency and energy retrofits. And also, really, we have to get the renewable energy infrastructure in place, because they estimate that with beneficial electrification in both building and the transportation sector, we could be as much as doubling the demand, the load. And so we really have to do the efficiency and, you know, we'll be talking more about alternatives to electricity, as Legislator Lerner is suggesting, but also just to be sure that we don't end up burning more fossil fuel. With regard, in other words, the support is for the scoping plan, which is based on the Climate Act, but the details are being worked out this year. A draft was released essentially New Year's Eve, and comments are due July 1st, and then all those comments will be processed, and they will come out with details. In many cases, the plan is still aspirational, and it's not the details of how it's going to get implemented and how it's going to get paid for are still being worked out. So, but with regard to resolution number 296, go ahead, Legislator Lerner.
Thank you. I did have one more comment. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
I can.
Okay. I see some language in here also around climate-friendly choices by consumers, public education information campaign. And I just want to flag that the choices consumers have is often dictated by what the producers make available to the consumers. So I just want us to understand that we need to have a focus on what is being produced and what choices are actually even possible that we have. Like, I feel like sometimes when you talk about encouraging people to make a smarter choice, that fails to acknowledge that there might not be a choice that individuals or even whole communities can often make. An example of that is the power generation monopoly that we have in our area, right, with Central Hudson. So just wanted to mention that as well before we vote. And I'm still a yes.
And I do want to say that there's a lot of emphasis in the law, and then of course in the scoping plan, on ensuring that so-called disadvantaged communities, which I prefer to call priority communities, receive 35% to 40% of the benefit of the transition that is proposed in the scoping plan. And that's very unusual to actually be very specific and acknowledging of what is a disadvantage, so that, you know, it doesn't end up being that only people that can afford solar or heat pumps can participate in the transition. And how that's all going to be worked out, remains to be seen. But anyway, any other discussion on resolution number 296? All right, I would like to call the question. All in favor of resolution number 296, please signify. And anyone opposed? All right. Resolution carries. And Fawn, between you and Jay, just to be sure that the resolution gets submitted on behalf of the Ulster County Legislature.
After session, of course. We'll make sure it gets in there, though, by the deadline.
Yep. Thank you. All right. Resolution number 307, authorizing Ulster County Legislature to enter into an agreement with NYSERDA for acceptance of Clean Energy Communities Leadership Round Action Grant and amending the 2022 Ulster County Budget Department of Environment. And I don't know, Nick, do you want to say a word on this? Or let me get it on the floor. Is there a motion?
I'll move it.
Okay, moved by Legislator Erner, second by Legislator Stewart, and third by Legislator Hansen. Nick, did you want to say anything about this, or?
Thank you, Chair Green. I'll say a few words about the background. This is a grant that was awarded to the county tentatively based on our participation in the NYSERDA Climates Clean Energy Communities Program. We're at the stage where we have to submit an application that details a plan. We plan to use this funding for doing weatherization improvements at two county buildings, including the one that I'm sitting in now. And it does not come with any match requirements. So it's going straight into the project and reducing the energy use of the building, this building and the one next door. I'm happy to answer any additional questions.
I just want to thank, I see your hand, I'll call on you in a second, but I want to just thank the department for its leadership in making Ulster County a leader. Yeah, and Legislator Erner, please, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Green. And so I want to ask Director Vazda, I saw this technical assistance study by Siemens, and I heard you say you're going with the weatherization improvements. Is FIM3, is that the only thing that we're doing with this resolution, with this money?
So the scope of the project that we've developed is insulation and air sealing primarily. So we had the Siemens study that made recommendations around some of the HVAC systems and the envelope of the building. And then more recently than that, we've had a residential style energy audit done on both buildings that was combined with a training aspect for building personnel. But that study recommended insulation, air sealing, and windows, which we currently don't have the funds in this grant to do the windows. So we're tackling those first two aspects now. And then I think that based on the principles of building science, the air sealing will give us the biggest improvement, followed by the insulation.
Okay, thank you for that. Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that and not go into the first recommendation, which had concerned me greatly because I'm seeing them say, take out the old boiler and put in another gas boiler and for both buildings. Right. And that seemed like contrary to our goal here, getting off fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm. And I think most of you have heard me say what a difference it was for my own home. I was fortunate to participate in an earlier NYSERDA project and did deep energy retrofit and reduced my bills
to about a third of what they were and so forth. So I really think the place to start is with energy retrofits. And I know Legislator Earners talked with Judith Karpova and others about when we do seal up our buildings, we have to be sure we're not sealing in problems with air quality. So that's really important. But with regard to this resolution, is there any further discussion on accepting this grant? All right. Well, I'd like to call the question. All in favor of resolution number 307, authorizing the county legislature to enter into an agreement with NYSERDA, clean energy communities, and so forth. Are we all ready to vote on that? Okay. All in favor? Anyone opposed? Joe, was that your hand went up as I was asking about opposed?
But that was like the sixth time I raised my hand on that one, so I just threw it up again, but I'm a yes.
Okay, sorry about that. Motion carries. At this point, is there any new business? Old business with regard to the Climate Smart Committee, a lot of sharing gets done. The Climate Smart Committee is, its primary mission is to advise the county on climate solutions that the county itself can implement or, you know, through legislation or education, promote countywide. And one of the things we're doing for the second year in a row is the Ulster County Fair. I mentioned this earlier. In terms of any green businesses, businesses that are really actively trying to implement climate solutions, and also any nonprofits. The Ulster County Fair generously gives the Climate Smart Committee two booths in the large tent. Last year, we filled up half of what would amount to a quarter of the large tent. And this year we'd like to get closer to half. We sometimes call that Climate Alley or Climate Row. And we do a lot of education and also give green building vendors a chance to reach out to potential customers. So it's kind of, climate education is, excuse me, sustainability and, you know, a green living expo. And then oversight committees, I don't know if we have anybody here who wants to give, an update on the Recycling Oversight Committee?
I put that on there, Manager, because we had been talking about the Forest Practice Board and the Fish and Wildlife Management Board.
Right.
And it appears that the Forest Practice Board in Region 3 is no longer active.
Okay.
The only Forest Practice Board that I think is still active is in upstate New York. And right now we only have one alternate sportsman on the Fish and Wildlife Management Board. There is, in theory, a seat on there for a legislator and an alternate legislator. Those appointments are done by the executive. There could also be a sportsman, and there's supposed to be, a primary sportsman. We have an alternate sportsman appointed. And there's supposed to be a landowner and an alternate landowner. But those seats, it appears, are not filled right now. But those are under the purview of the executive to appoint. So we may want to make a recommendation to him for a legislator and ask him to appoint someone, but
you want it?
No, it doesn't appear that anything's on there. So we used to have the Federated Sports Summit come speak to us on a regular basis, but we also used to give them several thousand dollars a year to do different stocking programs. And when we stopped giving them money, they stopped coming. So we could ask them to come, but I suspect if we do that, they will think we're going to give them money. Just
Legislator Stewart and then Legislator Hansen.
I was just wondering if it would be possible to manage for you to perhaps share with the committee the application form for businesses who might be interested in participating at the fair.
Yes, I will send that to Fawn and ask that she send it to the list, which is extensive, more than just the five of us, for EES and also for the Climate Smart. One of the volunteers from Town of Hurley made a nice flyer, and then there's some words that explain exactly what that initiative is and how to sign up.
And yeah, I'm sorry.
Just that I think the fee is $240 for a week's exposure, and that includes something like 8 or 12 passes, and they also give a 10% discount if you're going to be in Climate Row or the Green Living Expo. The Ag Society is being very generous, and also Cornell Cooperative of Ulster is going to be doing a composting demonstration this year. Did you have more questions?
I was just going to say that if we had the application and like a flyer or something, you know, that we could send, that would be great. I could share that with the Roundup Valley Business Association. We could also send it to the Roundup Valley Growers Association to see if anyone there might be interested. And I could share that with, you know, the ECCs in Marbletown and Hurley.
I was thinking one of the first businesses in the earlier iteration what's the bread company out on
Bread Alone?
Bread Alone, yes. And they've covered the roof with solar. They use all best practices to the best of their ability. And, you know, I think that people probably know that about them, but if they wanted to, for example, you know, have a booth, they could really help people to understand all the things that they are doing. But I will immediately, so I don't forget, because I have so many things stacked up, get that language to Fawn to share and try and fill up half of the large tent. And I think, yes, please, Legislator Hansen.
Fawn, and you had mentioned about the sportsmen, the fish and wildlife, and you had mentioned that, I guess, we had stopped giving money for stocking programs.
Yes.
Do you know when and why?
Well, it was after my tenure on the legislature. When I came back to work for the legislature, we had cut back a lot of contract agencies. We used to give to the Woodstock Ballet and probably like 20 or 30 municipal, you know, like groups like that. And we had asked them to be, you know, to kind of tell us how they were going to become independent from our support at one point. But that was like a big cutback that was done probably in the early 2000s during budget crisis, when we were trying to, you know, save money where we could. But it was a legislative choice that was made at a time when I wasn't here. So I'm not sure exactly all the reasons for each group or why they would have been included or excluded.
I've been on the legislature for 8 years, and I would say until you know, 2 or 3 years ago, they were actively participating and giving reports to this committee, that is the Sportsmen's Association.
I could certainly reach out to them. The Federation has a dinner coming up this fall, I think in September. I know they have some other activities going on. We could certainly reach out to them.
Yeah, I don't know if it is a direct correlation, but I know a lot of local municipalities and police departments, and you know, they stock different places for children's fishing events and outdoors. I know our PBA just did a great one. It was their first time doing it, but I know that gets costly too. I think, don't quote me, I think it was like $800 to stock our local reservoir. But yeah, find out if you can find out if that Sportsman Association, where they stand, and you know, an update from them maybe.
Sure, we could ask them to come talk to us. My husband and I used to do a stocking program, support several of the stocking programs. So $800 sounds about right.
Okay.
I know my son and my grandson had a great time fishing there in Highland at that
event. It was really well attended. And I know City of Poughkeepsie, I mean, that's in the other county, but I know a lot of places are doing it. And I know that the New Paltz Elks just posted one for children. And I think it's great for these kids that don't have an opportunity. They provided fishing poles and the fish and
the bait.
Yeah, it's a great way for students. So okay.
And it gets kids outdoors and absolutely, like away from in front of computer screens. So
yeah.
They also stocked the Federated Sportsmen used to stock pheasant and rabbit, and generally our donation to them in the olden days when I was the legislator went to their rabbit stocking program. But I don't know if those programs are even still active anymore, but we'll certainly invite them and find out what they're doing and what they're up to. Yeah, I know they do a lot of hunter safety programs and, you know, and things like that. And now that we've given 16-year-olds the authority to, you know, to start big game hunting, it's nice to see what they're doing for the hunter training and things
and
like
that. And all of that falls under our committee. So that'd be great.
Okay.
We did a fishing program up in Queemans, you know, with my Clearwater hat on for a weekend, and also did a lot of teaching about Hudson River fish, and the kids loved it.
Yeah.
It was really one of the most successful. There were a whole bunch of things going on at the park, you know, related to environment, landscaping and you name it, but the real draw was the fishing instruction and practice and how happy they were if they caught something and so forth. So
is the wildlife a management position that, you know, we're looking for a legislator to fill, is that, what is the focus of that group? Is it really on like sportsmen, or is it more like environmental?
It focuses on several things. I served on that when I was a legislator, also served on the Forest Practice Board. They would talk about state legislation. For example, I remember a big push at the time, part of the gas tax for gas stations goes to maintain the roads and highways in New York State, but there was a lot of gas sold at marinas. And they want to, and the Fish and Wildlife Management Board was pushing to make that money go to improve boat access and marina access, putting in docks and putting in boat launches and things. They discussed local environmental issues that were impacting, you know, fish and game. Different stocking programs that the DEC was undertaking. For a while, DEC was stocking walleye in the Wallkill River and things like that. We had a big focus on striped bass in the Hudson River for a while. The striped bass in the Hudson River were never really underpopulated like they were in the Delaware, but there was a restriction on fishing for them. And then when they opened it back up to commercial, they discussed that. So it could be anything that, you know, for environmental or it has to do with fish and wildlife. Right now, I'm sure they're focusing on wasting disease that's coming through our deer population now. And as I said before, we've got a lot of bears in the area. So those are things that I suspect, because I remember talking about bears back then were something new. I suspect all of those things are coming before them for consideration and management ideas. DEC would go over how they did their deer surveys to about the health of the overall population, about turkey surveys. They have a couple of days, usually in May, where they have people report if they see flocks of turkeys around, and just all kinds of things. I still subscribe to the DEC website. You'll see I forward you things from them every once in a while. You know, they have a lot of interesting programs going, and I'm sure there's climate smart issues there too. It looks like going through Fish and Wildlife.
Well, I find it kind of intriguing. I mean, if is there a website that I should could go to, or how would you suggest learning more about it?
I'm not sure. Okay. Like when I was a member, I got emails from them. And of course we didn't have an executive to appoint people, right. But I suspect if we sent a couple of names over to the executive and through the chair and, of the legislature and asked for them to appoint legislators, and then from the local region three, each county had a legislator, a landowner, and a sportsman, and each region would send somebody to the state committee. So they would talk about state issues up there too and help to draft state legislation. So it seemed to be a very influential committee, and I'm disappointed that we don't have more people taking part in it. But I was surprised to see the Forest Practice Board, just there's no mention of it anywhere. I can't find it, except one county upstate. So
why don't we do a little more research and bring this back up again next month and see if we want to make a recommendation? Sure. I would like to ask you to humor me while I just say something about the Ulster Sportsman Federation. When I was at the UCRRA, I happened to see a giant tire pile in Quarryville, and it was really scary because the homes were 200 to 300 feet from this massive 600,000 tires piled up. And I said, this is a disaster waiting to happen. And I invited all the stakeholders who were in court with each other and didn't want to be in the same room together. And I asked them to try a collaborative process where we were solution oriented. And after about 6 months, we worked our way through a solution where the folks up in Catskill that took tires and shredded them for recycling, they had had a fire and they owed a $375,000 fine. And that fine was waived because they spotted trailers. The sportsmen used heavy equipment to remove the tires and load them. And they all ended up getting, going to Catskill, and this mountain of tires in a quarry was emptied and filled, just landscaped, not filled, but landscaped. And 10 years later, when I was on Public Works, we had one of those reverse pilots to put a solar farm on that space. And I mention it because that experience showed me that when people can work together and be solution oriented, you can come up with amazing solutions instead of trying to duke it out in court and, cancel each other out rather than. So thank you for bearing with me. But it's one of the things that informed how I work at, in different circumstances, and why I believe collaboration is so valuable. And with that, I might ask for a motion to adjourn, unless somebody has any last minute business.
There he is.
Okay, motion to adjourn by Legislator Hanson.
No, no. Oh, I'm sorry, Phil wanted to speak.
I'm sorry.
Oh, please, I'm sorry.
Thank you. I just wanted to bring a few items back up in old business. Maybe a couple of them should have been in new, but we had last month I had talked about the air quality, and you mentioned that, Chair Green, as well. And just to tell the committee, I'm working to try and get, I guess you'd call it, Manna, you and I had talked about like an educational presentation that would probably most interest members of our committee here and the Health, Housing, Human Services, but would hopefully be open to the public or to other members of the county government. And just to get a handle on that, maybe it wouldn't just be that organization either, but I think we do have a lot to learn about the situation of the air quality, both in homes and elsewhere in from these folks and possibly others. So just wanted to just say I'm gonna keep working on getting that to happen, hopefully with everyone's support. So that's one thing. The next flag I have is we've talked for a few meetings now about this clearing forest land to do things like PV panels. And at one point we had talked about having a checklist of projects that came before us to say like, yeah, this, like you should do these things and not do these things. And I just wanted to not let that discussion slip away. It's not just about solar projects. It's really about any kind of project that might have an environmental impact, even not a project like many of us are becoming familiar, if we weren't already, about the situation in the town of Ulster and Glenerie Boulevard and the parkway over there, which is quite complicated because it involves different government agencies like New York City's DEP and Central Hudson and the railroad. And I've even heard now the business bread alone is and the residents and like negotiating all of that. I understand that there's limitations in our power in the county, but I'd love to see what we can do to try and bring peace to that situation. And maybe it would involve creating a policy as Manna, you and I talked about that maybe as like a test case. So I just wanted to flag that as well. And I was wondering also, has anybody heard any updates about Chippy after we sent that resolution? I hadn't heard that that the IDA had considered that yet, or did anybody hear if they did?
As far as I know, they denied the pilot.
They denied it, so they did what we asked them to.
They denied it, but what?
So they listened to us. They denied the
pilot. As far as I know, I mean, that's maybe secondhand, so we should double check, but okay. It was my understanding that the IDA agreed with us on this. And you know, that brings up a very important step for this committee to follow through. Legislator Petit and I had occasion sometime last year to meet with the IDA and ask, they offered to move sustainability criteria higher on the ranking of projects. And, you know, like many good ideas, if it doesn't get followed up with, it can get buried in all the new things that come along. So, you know, let's think about the best way to, maybe one or two of us could attend an IDA meeting and make that suggestion and even offer to work with them so that projects that are ultimately going to protect the environment and offer climate solutions are ranked, you know, more favorably. I personally think that no money should go to projects that are in any way going to exacerbate the climate crisis, but that's a giant step. Let's take the baby steps first. Did I see a hand?
I had two more points, even though I didn't raise my hand.
Go ahead.
One is just to mention that the state assembly speaker, for those who are following the Build Public Renewables Act, he set a public hearing for July 28th. And it seemed like that did have the votes to pass, but he didn't bring it to the floor. So in case that gives us a chance here, maybe we want to consider as a committee or even a whole body weighing in for that hearing. I personally support it, and I know some of the legislators that represent parts of our county have too, and already passed the Senate. So that's my second to last item. My final item is just about in terms of thinking about protecting the environment with our freight and with our commercial transportation. And a lot of times when we talk about vehicle use, it's often about like passenger vehicles. But of course, I know our county has our policy. We have the hearing coming up about the county's broad use of vehicles, but we might not often think about private haulers and such. And but there are folks who are working on that in here in our county. And I just want to flag that as something for us to think about. There's this one organization, for example, called the Center for Post-Carbon Logistics on Breezy Hill Road in town at Rosendale. And this thing called Moving Goods and People from Place to Place in a Climate-Constrained Future. As change comes, how will shipping and logistics adapt? We hear about the supply chain issues and all that. Maybe there's something that we can work on that right here in Ulster County. That's my last update. Thank you.
Nick, do you have any update on the zero emission vehicles that would get people to public transportation? I may not be saying that well, but I think you know the project I'm talking about.
I do, Chair Green, but I can't speak to it much because it's been, that project has run mostly out of the planning office through the transportation planners. So I don't have any update to give.
Okay. I also want to mention that maybe ask my fellow legislators for support for an ARPA pilot project for low and moderate income energy retrofits. I think that it's not gonna address the thousands of energy retrofits that we need, but what it will do is both benefit the owners of those properties, benefit the environment, and provide training as part of the green careers pathway. So that's, I think, really valuable. And that was one other thing I wondered. Oh, if anyone has not yet signed the letters that Legislator Hansett and I brought forward, we did thank you all tonight. Pass the memorializing resolution. Hopefully it'll get passed in the full legislature. But, you know, I think support for climate solutions is really urgent. So and please let, I think in this case, it would be to let Jay Mahler know, or Fawn, and she can let Jay know.
Yeah, the protocol is for Jay for the memorializing letters, but I'll be happy to pass it along. I also, during the meeting, put the resolutions for Public Works that has Resolution 309 in it. It's almost 1,000 pages, But it does have maps and does have the appraisal. It does, you know, show all the other properties that they looked at. It's quite extensive. So to make it easy for you to find, it's in your committee meeting for energy and environment tonight. It's, you'll go in there and see a public works resolutions. That's why they're in there. So
thank you.
I'm sorry, I can't put them in an email. They're just too big.
Too big.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
And any other new business, old business, or are we ready to adjourn?
I move that we adjourn.
Okay. We have a motion and a second, and all in favor, please signify by raising your hand and or saying aye. Anybody opposed? The meeting of the Energy, Environment, and Sustainability Committee for June of this year is officially adjourned.
Good night. Thank you all.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
Good night.